Accession number 30339, Reel 4.
The barracks were luxurious. We had clean sheets, nice soft blankets, and proper beds. They discovered that we hadn't seen any citrus fruits, so they put crates of oranges in the barracks rooms. Our blokes weren't used to the food. It was a bit on the light side for them. It was good, very good. Now, I remember one morning, they served up bacon, flapjacks, and maple syrup. Nobody had ever heard of having maple syrup on bacon. I thought, well, it sounds a bit odd to me, but I'm willing to try anything. I thoroughly enjoyed it. That was one of the first experiences. It was, North Carolina was very hot in May, very humid. And when we left England in May, it was cold. We were wearing greatcoats. So we were feeling the heat. We came up, prickly heat, sweat. The boy's home. We spent a lot of time. I think we were about 6 weeks before we got out of the camp. But we were giving demonstrations. Yes, nobody mentions this at the time.
You were the first British armed unit.
We were fully armed, not just the anti-aircraft guns. We got our rifles, we got machine guns, we got everything with us. Got a lot.
Since we were kicked out.
Yeah.
First British in America since the British were kicked out in, what, 17?
Yes, well, it wasn't mentioned anyway. And at the time, I hadn't even thought about it. Mm-hmm. We had an escort unit, roughly the same number of Americans, who were sort of, they were the hosts here, and they helped with everything with us. And you felt as though you were one. I mean, they weren't... We were all soldiers. We demonstrated our technology to the Americans, particularly mobile anti-aircraft. And it hadn't dawned on me at that time, but the Americans, of course, hadn't fought mobile anti-aircraft.
Norman Dunn, Reel 4. Sorry, go on, yeah.
And then they went down to the ranges, they shot down queen bees, they did all sorts of things like that. I was there as a driver then, because I was a tractor driver. And finally, we had a parade through Wilmington, which is the city of Wilmington, is about 60 miles out, because Fort Bliss is in the swamps. Wilmington was on the coast. We did a parade march through Wilmington with an American band, and the band struck up and moved off before the commanding officer gave order a quick march. So we moved off a bit like a concertina, which was a bit upsetting, but nobody missed a step. We marched all around Wilmington, followed by American medics, and we lined up outside the city hall. And I'm not kidding you, the sweat was running off the end of my nose, down my fingers, down the backs of my legs, because we weren't used to it. And nobody flaked out. Disappointed the medics. And various people made different speeches and one thing. Finally, the people of Wilmington were told they could take home a British Tommy for the weekend. So two of us were picked up by a couple called Getty, I think it was, yes. Taken home. And they then got us in as honorary members in their yacht club, which was a beach. And we spent the rest of the weekend bathing.
Can you remember what kind of quest, what did they ask you? Can you remember, I mean, for you as a farm boy from a remote part of North Devon to suddenly be in...
Well, I don't think that that came up, really, because we were just soldiers to them, I think. Yes, they wanted to know a bit about the war. They were also very concerned that they were going to be bombed. Of course, we laughed. I know they'd had a few oil tankers sunk off the coast by U-boats. But no way could a German bomber come over and bomb them and fly back again. And I didn't think the Germans had enough planes to sacrifice a plane and just to drop one or two bombs. Anyway, that was one of the panics in New York. But everything was all lit up, I mean. We were a lot of publicity, reams of publicity, which puzzled us, because nobody knew anything about it back in England. Then from Fort Bliss, we went up to New York to the Teaneck Armory. There'd been the blokes are getting a bit edgy. They've been pushed a bit hard, and they wanted all night passes so they could go out and have a good time, because Fort Bliss was 60 miles out from Wilmington, and the bus ride took up most of the evening. So there was a threat that they would go slow on the gun drill. So they were promised an all-night pass when they got to New York. But they had to be back by Reveille next morning. Okay, that happened. They all hit town. And the next day, they were supposed to give a demonstration at West Point Military Academy. And at Reveille next morning, they were there on parade at roll call, holding each other up, arriving in taxis and police cars and God knows what. Anyway, they went to West Point. They gave a demonstration and they broke the British Army records for getting a gun into action. Now, in the list of places that we visited, I noticed I've got a handbook that the Americans gave us, Au Revoir America, to us. West Point was mentioned, but didn't mention anything about what we did there. I don't know whether that sort of... Anyway, from there, we went up to Cape Cod, where there was another AA practice camp. And they challenged us to a Queen Bee shoot, which is a radar-controlled aircraft. But they wouldn't do it under our terms, because we never, ever went into action unless it was crash action. The tractor drives onto the site, drops the gun, and get it into action. It's done in minutes. I think it's something like 3 minutes. I think originally the ministry, when they wanted a mobile anti-aircraft gun, it was a 3.7. They got Vickers at Woolwich to come up with one. They wanted one that could be towed at 30 miles an hour and got into action in 15 minutes. Well, our chaps did it in 3 minutes. So, anyway, they demonstrated that. And then we got up to Cape Cod. They challenged us to Queen Bee shoot. They wanted 24 hours to get their gun into position, water the position down and fire settling rounds before they would shoot against us. And we wouldn't do it. We weren't allowed into Boston because apparently some time before there had been some trouble there. The British Navy had been there. Some Navy personnel had been beaten up by the Irish. So the sailors stayed on board, did unarmed combat, and one night they all went ashore to the hospitals. But they did consent. They took us in one night to a certain part of Boston, and we weren't to go into a certain quarter because of that. I was on duty one night at Cape Cod. There's a lot of scrub there, and sandy soil, one thing or another. There was a path through the bushes, and it was dark. And I saw something run out in front of my feet, and it had a white stripe down his back. Normally, if it was a rat or something, I'd take a flying kick at it. And I was about to take a flying kick at this, and I suddenly realised what it was. It was a skunk. I wouldn't have been very popular. Then it was a train journey right across the States. 8 days. Pullman cars, waited on by black stewards. Excellent, it was. We passed through several places, but we never got allowed to get off the train. One siding, people came out and had a look. Then, finally, the gambling place in the desert.
Las Vegas.
Yes. We stopped, before that, we stopped in the desert, actually. And everybody was out miles from anywhere, just desert. Everybody was allowed to get off and stretch their legs. We were told not to chase the jackrabbits because of rabies. There were photographs of the blokes and the big, enormous, great steam engines. Anyway, next stop was Las Vegas. We weren't allowed off the train. You looked out, it was sort of a honky-tonk town then, Las Vegas was. And there was a drunken lady that came out of the train. She tried to get on the train with us. The blokes were encouraging her in, and the police came and stopped her. We'd been 8 days on the train. Then we arrived in the Mojave Desert. We spent a fortnight in the desert demonstrating. It was hot, very hot, very dry. We're only a few miles from Death Valley. And we did aircraft shoots. We did anti-tank shoots with the 3.7 using armor-piercing ammunition. They had a long ditch with a trolley on it and a screen that resembled a tank. And our chaps were putting shells through that screen every time. And then they demonstrated us. What I realise now was infantry support. The mountains in the back, there were groups of rocks on them. They were shelling those with a 3.7 anti-aircraft gun using armour piercing. The lads, before they dropped the guns into position, there were two rattlesnakes, sidewinders. They dispatched them before they put the guns into position. There were a lot of scorpions, tarantula spiders, all sorts.
So, the idea of this trip really was that you would demonstrate your expertise to the Americans.
Yeah.
And what was your impression of their capabilities, the teams that you came up with, the way that they worked?
Normally, I didn't. We demonstrated to them. They didn't demonstrate to us. Because I think this was all new to them.
And were they impressed? You got the idea that they were pretty amazed that you could, the 3.7s could shell moving targets.
Well, nobody ever said anything. I think they did. But the comments afterwards, they some of the things that were said, yes. Some of the newspaper comments. Civilian soldiers, we were called in the newspapers, because we were TA. Very smart, very crisp. Some of the comments, you know.
And you were filmed, presumably films were taken of you. You were.
We had I've got a photograph album. It's got. We had an official photographer because you had to be careful what was shown. Some things weren't shown. But a lot of publicity. And then we went down to. I've got a list of stuff. You know, I've got a job to keep up with it. Riverside. We went in from the desert. There's one awful photograph of us. We had stopped on the way. It's about a 60-mile drive in, and we were loaded in the back of American lorries, sitting amongst all the equipment. Everybody getting a bit stiff and sore. He stopped halfway. Everybody had to get off the side of the road in the desert for the league. There was a line of American and British soldiers all along with their flowers on, down peeing in the ditch. Yes. The first thing was Santa Monica. 4 days R&R in Santa Monica. This was so we could go to Hollywood and Los Angeles and all that sort of thing. We arrived in this rather nice residential area in Santa, in a road that was a cul-de-sac, and at the end was a large house with grounds. And we debussed there. And of course, the blokes were a little bit slow in getting off the vehicle, they were getting a bit stiff. And it was supposed to be R&R. And you all had to fall in your troops and dress off for roll call and that sort of thing. And the sergeant major didn't think it was smart enough. He started effing and blinding and cussing and swearing and one thing and another. And I got a bit upset because it was a very smart residential area and women and children were coming out. And I saw our officers slope off. To my mind, they should have called him to one side and told him to, but they didn't. I got a feeling that the officers were all sort of academics. They were experts in their field. They weren't disciplinary soldiers. And so finally I got fed up. I did something I thought I'd never do. I came to attention, took one pace forward and shouted out at the top of my voice, "Women and children present, Sergeant Major!" Oh my God, what have I done? His mouth shut like a trap and he was gone. Oh boy, I'm going to keep out of the way your way from now on.
Good for you, good for you.
Yeah. No, I mean, that annoyed me intensely because we were a show unit. I mean, in barracks, yes, everybody have some blinds and you don't take any notice at all. They say what they like to you on parade. And you just switch off. But that was different. He was not liked. In fact, he was so unpopular that some of the blokes were plotting to do him. And they were picked men. And it was so bad. It was like that.
Do him in what respect?
I don't know what they planned to do with him, but there was a rumour of him coming home on the ship that they were going to chuck him overboard because the ship can't stop. But with 18,000 troops on board, you couldn't do that. Anyway, we then went back to Riverside. There was another military camp there, and just across the road from the military camp was a Marchfield airfield, air base. We were allowed to visit that one day, and we were shown the American Mitchell bomber. We were allowed inside it, and this was the Mitchell bomber that they used in the Western Desert as a tank buster. They had a three-inch cannon mounted in the fuselage, and inside the fuselage there was a manually operated breech block. So you had to load it, and the plane aimed itself at the tank. So I'd seen over that one. Then, after Los Angeles, we did a parade in Los Angeles. We did Hollywood. We met various film stars. We were entertained at the UCLA Club by Basil Rathbone, who had a fund of dirty stories to tell everybody. We were entertained to tea by Mary Pickford. You've heard of Mary Pickford? Yeah. At her home, Pickford. And she had to make up the party, had a lot of high school girls there, all heavily chaperoned. I got Mary Pickford's autograph, I got photographs of her. That was fantastic. Then we're on the train then through all the desert to El Paso in Texas, on the border with Mexico to Fort Bliss. To give demonstrations out of it. We didn't do anything in El Paso, but we were invited over the border by the Mexican government to a bullfight one Sunday. And we were allowed to march over the border in walking out gear. So we marched over the border into Mexico and marched through the city of Juarez to the bull ring. And I was amazed because there were placards there of Montgomery and Churchill, heroes. And everywhere we were greeted. And outside the bull ring, there was a Mexican guard of honor. And we had the shady side of the arena, which was the expensive side. And they killed four bulls. Now, some of our chaps were very upset. And some of them were old desert rats. They'd seen a lot of action. That upset them. I suppose because I was a farmer, I saw two sides of it. Yes, it was cruel. The bull really didn't stand much of a chance, but he was a bloody dangerous animal. And not like our heavy breeds of animal, they were very light and very agile. In fact, so agile they could jump the barrier with the attendants behind. We used to laugh like anything when they did that, because all the attendants used to come running back in the arena. You were told not to throw your cushions in the arena if the matador made a mess of trying to kill the bull with his sword. But everybody booed. Once or twice he did miss. He had to do it again. He had to retrieve his sword. And that was grisly. The sight of blood doesn't really upset me awfully, but I've seen animals die before. And I think I was more interested in how he died. Because the animal, when it stabs through the heart and chest like that, sinks down slowly. Then another chap comes in and places a short knife at the back of the skull like it and punches it, and that kills it instantly. I was interested in that.
But you didn't do no gunnery in Mexico. You didn't.
No. We were completely unarmed.
Right.
Yeah. But we were turned loose and worries for that night. We were turned loose and worries for the night. So for the evening, up until 10:30, we had to be out
in Mexico.
Yeah, in Mexico. Yeah.
What fun!
All in that rough. You were pestered by pimps all up and down the streets. Oh, God. Nightclubs where they had lap girls that came and plonked themselves in your lap and you had to buy them drinks, you know. But whenever you arrived in a nightclub, they announced it. They got up on the stage and announced it, and we were heroes. It was amazing. So I've often wondered about all the publicity, the newspaper published in particular, because it apparently went all down through Mexico as well. And I've often talked about it since. I couldn't understand it. And one of my son-in-laws, he's the Lieutenant Commander of U.S. Navy, he says that at that period of the war, there was disquiet amongst the American public that they were having to fight the war for the Brits. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? The same thing's happening here now in Britain. We're fighting wars for the Americans. So we think that's what it was all about.
It was a kind of publicity stunt, really.
Yes. In New York, for instance, we were entertained by Mayor LaGuardia in Billy Rose's Diamond Horseshoe. Floor show, all of us in there. I got a photograph I can show you, the original. And Radio City, we're given free tickets everywhere. We virtually had the freedom of New York. Outside the City Hall, all the dignitaries and their long speeches, one and another. My duty then, we took the guns into New York and parked them in the side street, ticker tape, welcome, and all the rest of it. And I was, seeing that nobody tampered with the guns. Somebody came up to me and asked me about the predictor that we used. Was it the Sperry? I said, sorry, I don't know what make it was. I wasn't going to be...
So he knew what he was talking about? With
he obviously seemed to know what he was talking about, and I thought he was fishing.
Sounds like he was.
Yeah.
Did you report that as an incident?
No. I just...
One thing, as you were chosen as a kind of representational group of what the British looked like, were you all... I mean, you're obviously a handsome man. Were the British squads sort of...
I'll show you the big photograph, certainly. But mostly, we wore shorts... Hairy knees, boots, putties, round the ankle putties, and a hose top, khaki hose top.
But you were all sort of fairly strong specimens of
yep.
the British species,
yep.
in other words,
yep.
that you were...
Yeah, with a ruddy complexion that out there with the heat and the sun, we tanned to an Irish mahogany colour, which the Americans were rather putty coloured compared with us. We looked a lot fitter than they were. War rations did a lot of good, actually. People were fitter, leaner. And that was the impression that I think our chaps gave during the gun drill. They were very smart.